Hey, truth be told, Captain Ron here for Tony Sweet. We are at the 2019 UFO Congress. I have Tracy Garbutt's nice enough to sit down and chat with us a little bit. She's a remote viewer, among many other things. And let's start there, Tracy. Let's talk about remote viewing. We just talked to Russell Targ. We had him on the show, and then we saw him and hung out with him at Contact in the Desert. The remote viewing experience is amazing. Now, you're a remote viewer, and you trained on remote viewing, right?
I did. Yeah, I did.
Well, what tell us about that whole
thing? Where should I start? I guess it really depends what you want to...
Well, you've had some really specifically incredible experiences with remote viewing.
I think, you know, I enjoy talking to people about it because I think it's something that a lot of people don't know about and something that we should all know about. I mean,
They don't think it's real. Most people don't think it's real.
I know. I mean, I think there's a lot of misinformation out there, right? People think, they hear rumors about it, and then they make a judgment about it. So they think that it's akin to being psychic and you just can get the answer like it's visible on a TV, like it's something perfect. And then you hear all the skeptics say, well, if it's like that, why can't you just remote view and tell us exactly who killed JFK and whatever? And, you know, it's not like that at all. Remote viewing is this amazing tool that you do with, you know, just your mind and just a piece of paper. But there were these protocols designed by Stanford Research Institute, of course, Russell Targ and Hal Puthoff were, you know, two of the original founders for that. Ingo Swann was one of the original remote
viewers. These are hard scientists, physicists, who were just as shocked that this worked as anybody.
That's right. These are scientists. And so they were part of working with Ingo Swann, who was this amazing psychic. And they developed these protocols. They tested them over time to see if they worked. And they started it by using coordinates around the world.
Right.
And they would have Ingo Swann, their psychics, and the other people they were working with, the other participants, try to view or bring in information about the coordinates that were, you know, so the target was essentially hidden from them, and they would try to acquire information. And to everyone's surprise, except probably Ingo Swann's, because he expected he would get these, people were able to use the protocols they developed and come up with a lot of this information. But again, it wasn't like
photograph. It's not like, oh, that's LAX.
Right.
But maybe there's a plane, a runway. And it's not an exact science. Targ says it's not 100%, and it's not like it's a photograph. It could point you in the right direction. And like if you're 30% over chance, that's incredible.
That's right. It's like gathering psychic clues, fragments, perceptions, and it's I think one of the biggest misconceptions is about the viewing part. It's actually more like everything except viewing. It's perceptions of other senses. So
you
might taste,
that
you empty your mind, you quiet off.
Yep.
Quiet off, cool down. We call it different things. Everyone
you quiet off, which I have not done that yet. Certainly not in public. So
yeah, right. But and then it's really, remote viewing is really a system of probing your mind with questions. So I know Lynn Buchanan has said it this way, and I absolutely love this and repeat it all the time. It's like your conscious mind interviewing your subconscious mind, or your left brain interviewing your right brain.
Sure.
But it's really in the questions. So you're trying to pull these answers, you know, so is it man-made? Is it natural? What does it taste like? What does it feel like? You know, any colors? Once you're, you know, you clear your mind and then you have a target number that you're working with, these perceptions begin to come to you. You don't go after them. When you relax into it with your intended target, these fragments begin to show up.
That's exactly what Targ says, if you try to do it, it won't work. Incredibly, you try not to do it and empty your brain.
Yeah.
And then you'll just, what are you thinking of? First thing, but it's like that thing. What are you thinking of right now?
Yeah, right.
And then it's like, water. Oh, water.
Yeah.
Write down water. And you write this down while you're doing it, right?
That's right. You write it down. What was I going to say? You just made me think of something else. just how you were saying, it's instantaneous. You know, sometimes you'll be assigned a target number, and even before you start the protocols, you'll start to get things. Like they'll come immediately. They'll come so fast that you're not even ready for them.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, but part of the thing with remote viewing it is this system that captures everything. So there is even an area for advanced visuals. So if you are getting them, you're going to document them. If you are feeling over-caffeinated, there's actually a place for you to document that, because it's really important to do this over time and to sort of study. You're going for the target, but you're also going through a process of studying yourself and studying your own strengths with this and your own weaknesses with this. So you want to be able to track everything so that you can go back and see, okay, I'm better in the mornings, or I'm better when I've had more caffeine. But this is the thing with remote viewing.
It a couple parity buttons, and all of a sudden I can really just crank these up.
Yeah, right. It's unique in, you know, people often ask, like, how is it different from psychic readings or psychics? But this is it. There are very specific protocols. It's all written on a piece of paper. You're tracking everything. You're working with verifiable targets that you can compare against. You know, you can find out your strengths and weaknesses.
Well, tell me the first time you did this. So the first time you did that, you went, oh, my God, I got it. Like, was it, is it, like, is it like six of clubs? Oh, yeah. What's it like?
Well, okay, so I'll just...
Like, what's the first time you felt like, oh, my God, it works, kind
of
thing?
Honestly, I can't even remember.
There had to be a time where you felt that way, though, right?
Well, so the very first time I ever tried it, before I was trained, before I really knew what I was doing, I was somewhere else, had nothing to do with the training, right? And they said, we're going to do a future remote view. And I'm thinking, what the F is that? You know, what's a future?
We don't care for that kind of language here, truth be told, so we'll cut that out. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. But what's a future remote view? And so they're saying, okay, so if today is Sunday, they say, we're going to do the remote view today, but we're not going to pick the person to pick the target that you're remote viewing until the following Sunday.
Now, that's insane.
Okay. So I'm thinking, I don't even know what you're talking about, but I'm here, I'll do it, I'll try it. And
it's like a guess.
Well, yeah, so I hadn't, as I said, I hadn't learned all the protocols. So they just said, just draw a few pictures of what you think it is, right? So I did this, and one of the things that I drew was this little sun, you know, with the rays.
Okay.
So then 7 days later, they pick the person who picks the target. I have to wait the whole week wondering what's going on. They open the box, and it is this little tiny daffodil without the stem. And I think, oh, it's a miss. Because if we were talking psychically, that would be a miss.
Sure.
A sun and a daffodil. But in remote viewing, this really illustrates one point about it and a difference. That's a hit. Because you're looking for, you're describing
same
your
shape,
target.
Circle.
You're talking about a sphere. You're talking about equidistant rays. And so it's actually, you know, an excellent hit. So that got me. I mean, I couldn't understand how that worked. I didn't understand what that was. But, I mean, that hooked me. I thought, what is this? What can we do with this? And why do we have it? You know,
right.
It became this great mystery to study and follow. And, you know, I'd had a lot of experiences happening over the course of my life that I want to figure out anyhow. You know, why do these things happen to us? What is the purpose? Can we do anything with it? So this was one way to pursue that.
The fact that you got close on a hit, doesn't that make you excited to try it again?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Fueled my fire.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you get things, I did a series of, this was just self-imposed, I did a series of 60-second remote views for quite some time. And it was just because I could see that sometimes you would get a target and your mind would spit out the right answer right in your advanced visuals. Like, it would happen so quickly. So I thought, what if I only give myself 60 seconds, you know? And what was I going to tell you about that? I absolutely
you're
lost
saying how you did it like every day, 60 seconds, over and over, boom.
Oh, yes. So the there was this one that I did, and, I'm sensing this thing really straight, just boom, boom. And this is the thing. You don't see it. You feel it. It's like all of the perceptions are overlapped.
It's a sense of it. That's a good way to say it.
Sense of it.
People think it's a picture. It's not a picture.
It's not a picture. I couldn't see it. So then you just, and you don't have enough information typically right off the bat, right? So then you clear off again. You might think of the target. Some people have a little mantra that they'd say. But then you begin probing with the questions. Is it natural? Is it man-made? Well, it feels to me like it's man-made. You don't exactly have a reason for it. You don't know why, but it feels man-made.
The gun to the head, which one would you pick?
Yeah.
Man-made.
Right.
Right.
And, you know, here's another weird example. It tastes like metal. So these perceptions are overlapping. So this one is one that I show in my lecture. It was the Eiffel Tower, you know.
But, oh, cool.
But I had no idea before it was revealed that it was the Eiffel Tower because I was just looking to describe
hey,
the
buddy.
Data. it really is this amazing, rewarding discipline that tells us that we oddly have this all-access pass. We can't always get through with the pass. You know, we don't always have all of the stars aligned so that we can get
now, don't you believe in magic? Like, suddenly you have superpowers.
Well, a little bit.
Right?
It's just, you know what? But no remote viewer gets it right all the time. So it's not like it works.
The best one's 30% or something.
Yeah. It's,
and that's incredible.
It's not like you get it right all the time. But when you do, and it's out of infinite possibilities.
Correct.
It's amazing.
So let's skip ahead to that one time that you did get it right, which you got it on the nose. It's insanity that this happened.
Okay, yeah.
This is beyond remote viewing. This is remote viewing plus.
So this is what they would call an outbounder.
Oh, really? There's a name for it.
Yeah, there's a name for it. And so you would put someone somewhere in the world at a specific time. You wouldn't. The tasker would. Whoever it is, the monitor, the tasker, not the monitor, I'm sorry.
They would quiet off. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. You would cool down. You would go through the protocols. You would write your target number. Do your ideogram, which is...
And this could be anything in the world.
And you want it to be anything in the world, too. You don't want any information. You don't want any front loading. It's much harder because then the ego has a chance to guess.
Right.
Right? So you want it to be out of infinite possibilities. So all we're doing is coordinating the time. Someone is somewhere in the world, and you want to describe their environment and determine whether they're male or female.
Right. And you are in Canada.
I was in Canada at the time, in Vancouver. So... this happens. I've cooled down and I start getting these perceptions, and I often will share what they were like just so people kind of know how they come in, you know? So immediately I begin to feel water. I'm smelling it and I'm trying to determine what kind of smell this is. And I can tell that it's water that's not fresh. It does not smell fresh, you know?
Right.
And I can smell the fish. And I can smell, I always say this, but it's so true, and I always remember when this happened, this smell of duck poop, like a park, and that the water was...
Somebody that knows the smell of duck poop very, very intimately, obviously you knew exactly what that was.
I grew up in Canada.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. We've got the Canadian geese.
So you think, is it salty?
Right, well, this is what you're asking yourself, or you're just waiting and you're able to tell. So for me, no, it wasn't really salty, but it was fishy and not fresh, and I could tell that it was an enclosed body of water, but not a small body of water. It was a larger body of water, and then I began to be able to smell the concrete border and the moss on the concrete. And then I could feel the water in the air, that there was almost like a spray, yes.
Yeah.
And then here again, I couldn't see this, but I could sense it, this shape. So kind of this shape, like this, a circular shape, a bit of a dome. And again, you don't know, you're drawing these things and writing them down. And on this particular one, my mind is not really guessing. I was learning.
That's good. You shouldn't be, right?
Yeah, right. Good. Exactly. I was learning at the time. So I wasn't confident. But then I started to get this real locking in feeling. I felt like I am there. You know, it was a deeper level of engagement. And I remember thinking, I don't know how I know this, but I feel like I am in the middle of a city. Like I could almost sense the buildings surrounding this body of water. So the very final thing that I saw, and in this particular case, I saw it, and it was clear and probably the clearest of any I've ever seen in any remote view ever. I saw a reflection of an eye, and it was a woman, because I could see the makeup around her eye, but the reflection was looking back at me.
That's insanity. Okay. That would wake me out of this kind of thing.
Yeah, and I thought, oh, it's a woman. And I mean, I was so confident, which can be dangerous with remote viewing, but I was so confident that it was real, that I thought, if I am wrong, I'm going to quit because I feel that certain about
it.
So the reveal comes. It ends up being exactly, you know, I wasn't even surprised. It was that clear, right? It's called Lake Eola. It's a place in Orlando, Florida. It is a water park in the middle of the city of Orlando, and it has a fountain with a turtle-shaped fountain that is the center part of the entire place. But the best part of the story was I lived in Canada my whole life.
Well, now wait, so that's the remote view that's insane.
Oh yeah, this is the part.
Two parts of the story.
That's right, here's the other part. I lived in Canada my whole life. I end up through a weird chain of events moving to this city, to Orlando, Florida. And then I end up meeting the woman who I was remote viewing.
The eye you saw.
The eye I saw.
Now that to me is what I call a synchronicity. Synchronicity is like, that's my favorite thing in this whole 50 genres. Synchronicity is the only one that's happened to me, and it happens crazy, and I always love to talk about it. This, to me, the synchronicity of that is almost as exciting as the remote view of this.
I know.
The synchronicity is insane.
I know.
That you would meet this woman that lived literally 2,500 miles away.
Well, the fact that I would end up moving to that city and standing in that place, there's so many more things I could talk about.
But you didn't see her there.
With that. No, I didn't see her
there. Did you go see the place first?
Oh, yeah, I did go see the place.
And that had
I absolutely you out. Went, yeah, it did. But what the best part is that when I met her, her name is Patricia Cyrus, and she is this amazing remote viewer herself. But when
she's also a remote viewer.
Yeah, she is. When I met her, I thought, oh, this is amazing. Because, you know, I was in a learning phase, and there were so many more things that I had seen that I wanted to ask her about face-to-face. I wanted to bring my remote view. So I asked her, can we go for lunch? So we went for lunch. I brought my remote view, and I said, I thought I saw you. There was this reflection, and I saw your eye. It's how I knew that you were female. And she said, oh my gosh, I never told anyone. When I was sitting there, I opened up my purse and I pulled out a compact and I looked at myself in the eye in case it helped anyone. So
now see, that's insanity. So now it's like not even this ability of you remotely viewing. You are literally seeing through her eyes.
Yeah. Sort of. Yeah. Well, I mean,
this is insane.
This is an important story. I mean, it is for me, but it's not really about what I can do. It's about what we can do. So if I can just do this in the training phases of remote viewing, if I had stayed there longer.
What can Russell Targ do, you know?
Oh, right. Yeah. If I had stayed there longer during the remote view, and I am perceiving through her senses, I am looking, it would seem, through her eyes at herself. So if I am sort of commandeering from this point, what more can we do?
Can you hear what she's hearing?
Well,
can you, right?
Can you, and then the natural question would be, if people can do this, can they remote influence from this point of view? I mean, it gets into some interesting places.
This is literally the more you know, the more there is to know.
That's right.
That's exactly what this is.
Yeah, and then, you know, I think about, wow, we have this incredible access, this amazing ability to go way beyond anything that we're ever taught about ourselves. And at the same time, when you're exploring that, you're thinking, my God, what if they ever weaponized this?
Right.
Right.
And supposedly the military was doing it. The men who steered goats and all of that.
Yeah.
The military was looking at this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to believe they didn't get something out of that. I mean, if we figured out that it's real.
Yeah.
If they studied it that hard, I'm sure they got
something. Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, I find it very hard to believe that it ever stopped. I mean, they declassified it officially in 1995.
Yeah, yes. Project Blue Book stopped. And guess what happened? They kept doing it.
Right. Exactly. So I'm sure it moved into private sectors. And I'm sure...
It's at the Bigelow Ranch somewhere.
Yeah, we know this continues on because associative remote viewing is used for corporations to predict whether their stock is going up or down. I mean, there's all sorts of practical applications for it. But you gotta know that if we know about a tool that's that powerful, we don't even need any additional nothing to help us do this.
Think about if somebody nefariously used this, how scary that is.
That's right. That's why I always say to people, do not remote view your friends.
Oh, you know, let's
leave that alone.
Can you imagine?
But I think, honestly, I feel that people should know about remote viewing. Just to be a savvy human being, we need to know that this is, A, something we can do, and, A, something just that we should know about that can do.
Yeah,
you know?
Fact that we can do this, now I think, well, what else can we do?
Well, me too. That's what I'm always thinking. But for me, I mean, I was here talking about remote viewing because, yes, I think it's an important tool. Yes, I think we should know all these things. And, yes, it's very interesting to go remote view about some external target. But one of the most important things to me when I was remote viewing over, a pretty long period of time, very, very seriously, was I began to notice that this is an exquisite method of breaking down the language in symbols between my conscious mind and my subconscious mind. So, and the subconscious mind seems to have all of this additional information. Like, the subconscious mind seems to be part of the part of us that is able to that has extrasensory perception, that people often will tell stories of their, you know, parents or loved ones passing. This other part of them that is not conscious and can't quite explain it will pick up these warnings, this intuitive information about life events that are going to happen. So the subconscious mind appears to be this extra intelligence. Synchronicities are probably all a part of that, right? So I think I was proposing to people.
It's not quite psychic, but it's intuitive.
It still could be part of the subconscious mind more than the conscious mind. Like, we know that a lot of really amazing things are coming from that place.
Yeah.
So for me, remote viewing is a tool where we can study these symbols and we can learn more about ourselves.
Yes.
So. That's just one thing that I absolutely love about it. And I think when we do spend the time and we do work to evolve our brains and learn more about ourselves, especially at a conference like this, we are at, UFO Congress. How does this relate to UFOs? Does it? And I think that learning this symbolic language, this deeper part of us, this deeper part of ourselves that has all of this extra information, if we go there and examine that and expand our perceptions, that just might be a way that in the future, if we have any encounters with, you know, a more advanced species, this might be one
way
we could connect. Because
Absolutely.
Of all the reports of abductions and UFOs, you never hear that there is a language. You know, there aren't words. There's not writing. There
right,
aren't
it's always
sentences.
In the head.
It's always in the head. I mean, well, I shouldn't say people do report thoughts, like thought transference, but I think that this symbolic language might, I don't know for sure, might give us a little bit of a leg up, possibly into a different type of language, you know, a different
method
of communication.
We don't know any of these things, but we're getting an inch closer
all the time,
and that's awesome.
We don't know for sure. We absolutely don't, and I don't pretend to know.
But listen, you're on the abduction thing, which is a perfect thing. I want to talk to you real quick about abduction, too. The Dr. Jacobs, for example, says I love this guy.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I think he's fantastic. And he says that the alien abduction phenomenon does not discriminate, doesn't care about age, race, income, where you live, how your city does not matter.
Yeah.
So anyone is able to do that. Then there's some people, I've heard some things where they think there's a certain blood type that's more frequently.
Yeah, the Rh negative thing.
Yeah, that's, I don't know how fleshed out that is, but that's the thing. But I think you have stumbled onto something that does possibly pick who gets abducted, and it's the right left brain thing.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
It is.
Yeah. So, well, I have a few different thoughts about this. I think. So yeah, I talk about the right left brain a lot.
I think that fits right in with this, and maybe that is sort of an indicator possible.
Maybe
or more likely.
It could be. So here's one way I think of it. So it's possible that a certain part of the population is being abducted, but it's also possible that everybody is, and maybe people who are slightly more right-brained might have a different way that their memory might bleed through memories of it.
What do you mean maybe everybody is?
Well, it's just occurred to me, you know, when people say, how do you think they select who they abduct?
Right.
And, you know, I think probably they would take a sample. That would be more likely. But I have also thought about, what if they don't? What if everybody is part of this program, but only some people remember it? Now, this is just one theory, but it's probably the least likely theory.
Yeah, so that's a tough one. That's a deep thing to...
Yeah. Or like...
She's being hazed and hassled by some...
Yes!
Goodness. Some of these heckler fans that come here, they're very rude.
So I had talked about that before, that it seemed to me that a lot of people who are off on the spectrum of right brain were remembering these abductions. And so were they the ones more likely to be abducted? Are they the ones more likely to remember the abduction? Maybe it's that.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
And but also, like you said before, with the thing you have to pick, is it more likely that it's man-made or not? Well, is it more likely if you had a room full of musicians or a room full of mathematicians and you had to guess who's getting abducted more, which one? Go.
Yeah, the musicians.
That's right.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
It does seem to be more of a right brain person. There's a lot of people that come out that say that they're...
Yeah, you know, this is what makes me wonder, because you would think, you know, I always think of abductions and anything to do with extraterrestrials in terms of if looking at ourselves way down the road. If we progress 100 years, 200, 500... you know, 1,000 years, what would we be like once we are a spacefaring civilization? What would we do? So we're already out there. We're visiting other planets. Our scientists are studying other planets. Our behavioral scientists want to know the psychology. Maybe we would want to start civilizations and look after them from afar and not interact. So this is how I always try to think about reflect back and think about
why would they be abducting us?
Why would they be abducting us? And then, in that scenario, the way I'm laying it out, I think, okay, if we were really that far ahead, and there was a rampant disease on our particular home planet, so we wanted to try to culture and begin a civilization that did not have that defect. And so we would start them on another planet. I'm talking way off in the future. I'm going all sci-fi here. Maybe we would decide we don't want to interfere, but we see there is a potential problem. We don't want to, so we might come in at night when they think they're dreaming, can sort of control the situation, take some eggs, take some semen, start again, and we're going to try again on this planet. And so
there are reasons why someone might do this.
Well, yeah, so I just try to put it, I mean, we think of ET and aliens as this, you know, this crazy far out thing, but I think sometimes we should bring it back and just think, what would we be like when we have all of these opportunities to colonize planets? Right. And what would we do? and how would we do it? And things start to make sense to me. I mean, and you have to also take into consideration where we are with artificial intelligence. It's increasing exponentially. So we can't even fathom right here what that's going to do with us.
Well, right now we're just living in a
simulation anyway. So. Yeah, we could be.
Could be. Most likely
billion
we are.
Billion to one chance this is base reality.
That's
right?
True. So. You know, the other side of that is how Jacobs, again, the best analogy.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of went off there, but from Jacobs. All right.
The Jacobs thing is that when people say that, well, they would just show up and then land on the White House lawn. That to me is just so asinine, because it's not like that at all. It's like this. It's in the jungle. I'm sure we have two scientists walking through the jungle. They see a giant ant hill there, and they're going to study these ants. There's a million ants there. They take a jar. They pluck 10 of them out of there.
Yeah.
They keep them for a while, weigh them, check them, put a number on their back, and put them back. We don't stop and check with the queen. Hey, is it okay if we take 10 of these?
Yeah, right.
We don't.
Do it.
We just do it, and we put them back because it's our objective to see how. Then we come back and get them again. How much do they weigh? How many babies are they going to have? We check on that stuff. So maybe they're doing that kind of thing. That would make sense. Why would we stop and talk to the queen of the ant? They're never going to get it anyway.
Yeah.
And he says the reason this is clandestine is because they don't want to tell us. I mean, if they wanted to, they could land on the White House.
Yeah, they could tell us. But
so they're in control. So it's. That mirrored with what your analogy was. If we were that far advanced, maybe they know we're all going to get this disease, and they're going to fix the DNA of a few of us, and eventually the math would work that we wouldn't die out. Who knows?
I don't know, but
there's no way we'll ever know.
No, we won't. And I mean, Jacobs has a very sort of nefarious outlook on this, that this is essentially a planetary takeover, right?
Well, possibly, yeah. But he said yes, he does say that.
Yeah.
But at least for sure, it's their objective. Whatever they want.
Right.
They don't
right.
care what our opinion is.
Yeah.
They don't.
They're just doing it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And possibly he does think that, yes, they could be infiltrating us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think a lot of other people kind of are starting to believe that as well. I don't know. I mean, that's one total possibility. But the interesting thing about David Jacobs' work to me, I love his work. I appreciate his work. I think it's super valuable in the field.
Agreed.
The only thing that I can say that actually gives me hope that there's something else going on, that there might be a mix, it might not all be bad, is that he does take a skewed, in my opinion, it sounds like he takes a skewed sample. So when he takes abductees, he only takes people who are traumatized by their experiences.
Well, that's who comes to him, too.
Who comes to him.
Right.
So,
that's true. He's only looking at that because that's who he gets.
Right, yeah. And right. Because he does it for free, he will see them over and over and over. I mean, this takes a lot of his time. So he does have this one small sample, and he is only coming across a very few types of species, and maybe he's 100% right. You know, maybe that is absolutely it. But I always just take that into consideration that he is taking the most traumatized people. He says, like, if you're okay with your life the way it is, and you're managing, don't dig in, right? That's how he positions it. And so, but if people absolutely cannot live the way they are, he'll take them in. So they are ultra traumatized. So they're all sort of on one end of the spectrum, right?
That's a very good point. Absolutely.
So I'm not negating anything he's saying. I'm just saying we need to keep that in
right.
mind.
That's true.
And but then we have all the other researchers too. And, Yvonne Smith did this amazing lecture. I always talk about it. Where she said, and I saw it in 2013.
She also works with people that are traumatized.
She does, but
she's
not
PTSD. Kind
but
of
she
stuff.
Also takes anybody. She takes right. everybody and anybody, and they pay her.
But you
her.
Wouldn't call her unless you were having a problem.
Well, some people have experiences, and they're curious about it. You know, it's just they can't, like, they've had this memory or this dream or this fragment or missing time. They're not necessarily traumatized, like they can't sleep, but it bothers them.
Yeah.
They just want to know. They want to investigate. So this is sort of a different type of client. And unless I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, they can correct me, but this is how I believe I've heard it from them.
Mm-hmm.
And so Yvonne always talked about You know, if I saw one person reporting the same thing, fine. But then she was getting 10, 20, 30, 40. So she started to have them draw what was going on so she could compare them because they hadn't met each other. And then she did a presentation of all of their, all of the common features, but drawn out. And here you're seeing a little bit of a different story from what David is showing. And so I think it's really important to get the, to at least, and I'm sure this is still only a fraction of what's going on, right? But what it does allude to, it, at least in my books, is that there are multiple agendas going on.
Right.
So there might...
Right, they both might be spot
they
on.
They might, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, there's great research out there. I mean, as best you can do, considering what it is, the nature of it. But, I mean, I actually hope it's multiple agendas, that it's not just one group that's in control of everything. But abductions are a freaky, fascinating...
They are, and I feel for those people, man.
Yeah.
I mean, something's happened to them, and I really feel for them. And the thing is, like, well, it's just this is one of those things that's so hard to know.
Yeah.
So hard to know.
Yeah.
But by exploring these things and talking it out and being open to it, we're getting a little bit closer, and that's fast. And I want to know. I want to know while I'm still alive.
Oh my God! Yes.
You know.
Yes.
I want to zip this thing along.
Right. Like I think of Stanton Friedman.
I know that sucks. Yeah.
And that, you know, that he didn't, although he probably knows now, right? Possibly.
Yeah.
If you believe that.
Yeah.
Maybe he knows.
Kathleen thinks he's talked to her.
That's right. Yeah, said that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to wrap it up there, but I'll tell you, thanks, Tracy, for talking to us. It was really fun, very interesting stuff. And we're that much closer, and we're going to keep working on it, and hopefully we'll get even closer. Keep working at it yourself. Thanks for sharing us all that stuff. I really appreciate it. For Mr. Tony Sweet, I'm Captain Ron with Truth Be Told here at the 2019 UFO Congress.